God had said to Abraham, "Abraham, I'm going to make of you a great nation. You're going to be the father of multitudes." And then he had a barren wife, and he had one baby. And then he was called to sacrifice that child. And after he showed how much he believed God, that was postponed, but he still only had one child. And he was old, and he died. And so that child has two children. That child was Isaac. He had two children, but only one was chosen to help fulfill the promise. That was Jacob. And Isaac passed from the scene, and that left just Jacob. So three generations, "I am going to make you the father of a multitude." And there's only Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the patriarchs. But God keeps reiterating the promise, the covenant, the testament, the agreement, the contract. He keeps at it. And then Jacob marries Rachel and Leah, and it's not it's not always a pleasant story. Leah having lots of babies but not being loved by her husband. Poor Rachel being loved by her husband but not having babies. Neither of them are very happy. And in the end, that very sad scene with the youngest of the 12 sons, Benjamin, actually bringing about his mother's death. "Give me children or I die." She got both. But now we have another problem. And the problem is that we have too many babies. You say, "Well, wait a minute, not too many babies, because the scripture says in Ruth that Rachel and Leah built the house of Israel." They had lots of babies. Well, they had too many children because they were strangers in the land of Canaan. This was not their land. When Sarah died, in Genesis chapter 23, Abraham goes to the Hittites and he says to them, "I'm an alien and a stranger among you. Please sell me some property for a burial site." And after a great deal of negotiation, they agree to sell him a field and the cave of Machpelah so that he can have a burial place for his family. And Abraham and Isaac and Jacob lived in tents. When the Lord came to visit to have lunch with them at one point, they were living in tents. This was no permanent place for them. And Genesis chapter 36, we read, "For their property had become too great for them to live together." You see, they're beginning to expand the family. "And the land where they sojourned could not sustain them because of their livestock." So as Abraham and his nephew prospered, and as the family began to grow, they didn't own the land. They were having problems with grazing rights. And they were also having problem with water rights and with wells. So here they were on this land, and the land could support them, except that they didn't own the land. They didn't have rights in the land. In Genesis chapter 33, Jacob is dealing with Shechem, and he buys a piece of land where he had pitched his tent. And he bought it from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father. Wow. You see, Hebrews chapter 11 says that that Abraham was a stranger and that he lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob. They were strangers. They didn't belong. This was not their land. And not only were they having trouble with land and grazing rights and property and water rights, but they were having other problems with their neighbors as well. Genesis 34, as a family starts growing, there are these things that happen, you know. Now, if you have a family, now I've raised 12 children, and you have trouble with neighbors when you have your kids. They trample down the flower, you know, the next door neighbor, or they break windows, or they, you know what I mean, if you have this crowd, and we have something like that happening. So Jacob has to lay down the law to Simeon and Levi. He says, "Hey, you brought trouble on me by making me odious among the inhabitants of the land. And my men, being few in number, well, they'll gather against me and attack me, and I'll be destroyed in my household. Will you guys behave yourselves?" We're in a very vulnerable position here. So you got to be careful how you act towards our neighbors. You got to walk carefully. There are a lot more people than us. And then in Genesis 38, one example of the terrific struggle, the sordid story of Judah and Tamar. There is this terrific temptation for synthesis, for a coming together and absorption into the tribes there in Canaan. The terrific temptation for intermarriage and for this large, what is now a large family, a set of small clans perhaps, the 12 sons of Jacob and their children and their children's children. There is this danger that they're going to be absorbed into these people who own the property, who own the land, and who at any time can reach down and crush them. They're such a small group. And so, in short, there's too few of them. There's not enough of them to take the land. I mean, they're just a large family. But there's too many of them to remain in the land in any kind of happy condition. In Psalm 105, we have this great commentary on this. Psalm 105, remember, gives us a commentary from Abraham up through Joseph. It's a terrific psalm. And Psalm 105:11 says, "The Lord confirmed to Jacob, 'To you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion you will inherit.'" But then it says, "When they were but few in number, few indeed, and strangers in it, they wandered from nation to nation." I think that means they wandered around the land. They didn't own it. The Lord had confirmed to Jacob, "I'll give you the land of Canaan as the portion, as your portion. You'll inherit it." And then it says, "But when they were but few in number, few indeed," underlined, "few indeed, they wandered from nation to nation." And so the Lord has a solution. He's going to do this. He reaches into the family and he picks the 11th son, Joseph, Rachel's first child. This child is a cause for dissension in the family. He was their father's favorite, which was really hard on the 10 elder brothers. He was given the coat of many colors, as we call it. That was the coat that signified he was the key heir, which is really tough on his 10 older brothers. And my, how it must have hurt Leah. And then he has these dreams where they're all bowing down to him. And the scriptures say, concerning relationships within that troubled family, his brothers could not say a kind word to him. But the Lord has a job for him, a job to be a secret agent. And he goes off to find his brothers to deliver a message. They're out grazing the sheep. And he has to travel a whole lot further than he originally thought, probably an indication of the problem of grazing rights, because they had to go far afield, miles and miles, to find a place to graze their flock. And Joseph's brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. And they see that boy, here comes that dreamer. And they decide they're going to kill him. That's how bad things are. And they take him and they throw him in a pit. But you know the dynamics of that. They don't end up killing him. They end up almost killing Jacob. They don't kill Joseph, but they sell him into slavery. And they take an animal and they butcher it. And they throw the blood all over Joseph's coat that marked him as the heir. And they go back and they say, "Oh, Daddy, look. Oh, there's a musical called Joseph in His Technicolor Coat." I don't know if you've ever seen it. It leaves God completely out of the story. If you want to see a secularized version of the story of Joseph, that's it. But there is a part I like in it, and that's when the sons come back and they sing this this song to their father, you know. "Oh, that's all right, Daddy. There's going to be another star in the sky, you know. Your son's up there." And just the kind of comfort that never comforts anybody, where poor Jacob is torn apart, his son is dead. But he's not dead. He goes to Egypt as a secret agent. Now, a secret agent has a job to do. In this case, the job was a secret too. I mean, Joseph knew God had picked him for something, but he didn't know what. And if you're going to go in as a secret agent, you got to have a cover. I mean, you just can't go waltzing into the place and say, here I am, representative. No, you got to sneak in. You got to have cover. Good spy has cover. And he does too. He has this great cover. He goes in shackled as a slave. And he ends up, now you can see exactly what's going to happen here. I'm sure you can. He goes in there as a slave. And he gets a job in Potiphar's household. Potiphar is the captain of this army unit for the Pharaoh. Oh, and he loves Joseph, and Joseph prospers him and prospers his family. And Potiphar says, Joseph, you're terrific, and what can I do for you? And Joseph says, Potiphar, you know, my family's back there, and you know, maybe if we could take a few Egyptian regiments up there, we. But I don't know if that was the plan, but we never got that far, because we never got a chance to tap Potiphar to use the military power of this great world power to take care of that family up in Canaan, because there's a counteragent, Potiphar's wife. She works for the enemy, and she tries to seduce Joseph. And it's, talk about amazing things. Here's this young lad, probably about 18, away from home, a bickering family. I mean, he comes from what do we call those kind of families now? Dysfunctional family. He came from a dysfunctional family. His mother is dead, and he's left at the hands of these older brothers and a stepmother who's probably not too kindly towards him, and they wouldn't say a kind word to him, and they throw him into a ditch. They almost kill him. They sell him as a slave, and he ends up in the land. Well, why shouldn't he just do whatever feels good? But he says, I can't sin against God. Now, there's an amazing thing. I call Joseph, the broken home hero of the Old Testament, because you know that you don't have to sin, and he won't. And he won't sin, but he gets thrown into an Egyptian prison, which is no fun at all. No fun at all. And the prison is a horrible place. I'm sure it was before penal reform. But you know the story of how there's a couple political prisoners in there, and they have dreams, and he tells them the dreams, and the first guy says, you know, you're going to come back into power. Remember me, will you? And the other guy, he tells him his dream, and he says, oh, boy, I could be wrong. He wasn't wrong, because that fella died. And Pharaoh calls him. You know, Psalm 105 again comments on this. Psalm 105. Well, the Lord had said to Jacob, to you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion you inherit. But you're few in number, few indeed, and you're strangers in it. And he called down famine on the land and destroyed all their supplies of food. We're going to see that in a few moments. That famine in the land was no accident. God did that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. And Psalm 105 says, and God sent a man before them, Joseph, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons. But the king, the Pharaoh, set him free and made him master. Wow, that's amazing. God had this in mind the whole time. And Joseph comes, and he's clean shaven, and he tells and explains the dream. And Pharaoh says, I got to get somebody to help us. Let's see, 7 good years and 7 really bad years. And the bad years are going to eat up the good years. And here, this young man's got some suggestions. And I don't know if he's sure he can trust anyone else. He said, would you like a job? And he gives him a job as Minister of Economic Planning and Development, Secretary of the Agriculture. And it becomes so powerful in that during the time of famine that he makes him the prime minister. He's right up at the top of the Egyptian government. And as the scriptures say, God called down famine on the land and destroyed their food supplies. And he sent a man before them. And the Lord comes and says to Jacob, go down to Egypt. Go out down to Egypt. This is Genesis 46:3. It's a very important idea because God is telling us what he is doing. Go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. So they came down from Canaan. They came into Egypt, and they are told, I will make you a great nation there. And I will surely bring you up again. I will go with you, for I am God. I am El, the Elohim of your father. Then Israel entered Egypt. And Jacob lived as an alien in the land of Ham. And the Lord made his people very fruitful. He made them too numerous for their foes. I think that's in the context of Canaan. It's in Egypt that they became a multitude of people. Joseph says, God sent me ahead of you to preserve life, but it's more than preserve life. You shall live in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, and your children and your children's children. And Pharaoh says, take your father and households, and I will give you the best of the land of Goshen. And the results? So Joseph settled his father and mother and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land. And they acquired property in it and were fruitful and increased greatly in numbers. They were fruitful. They are increased greatly in numbers. They are multiplying down there. They're going to become too many for their foes. Edersheim, the Jewish Christian writer, said in his History of the Old Testament, there was no other place on earth where God could do what he was going to do in Egypt. Well, I'm not sure whether or not that's true, but I know why he said it. He saw that as a place of protection. They were under the protection of Pharaoh, under the protection of Joseph. Not only that, they were in a prosperous land. Not only that, they were in Goshen. Goshen was the delta area of the Nile. And here they are in this really fruitful area. And Egypt becomes for them, what would you rather? Do I call it an incubator? Or do you like more a womb? Is Egypt the womb or is it the incubator? In any case, we have a population explosion. And Exodus chapter 1, verse 7 tells us, we've already heard in Genesis 47, they were fruitful and increased greatly in number. And there were other places where it talked about how many. But Exodus 1, 7 summarizes what was going on here. There is something happening among these people. The sons of Israel were fruitful, number one, and they increased greatly. And they multiplied, and they became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them. How's that for redundant language? Sometimes you have to be redundant to get something across. Listen to that. They were fruitful. They increased greatly. They multiplied. They became exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Planned Parenthood would not be pleased with this. In fact, Planned Parenthood in Egypt was not pleased with this. We have this multitude of people, but we also have a problem. A new king. I'm going to be working my way through Exodus chapter 1, starting with verse 8. Remember, verse 7 is those five descriptions of the multitudes, the multiplication. In chapter 1, verse 8, a new king came who didn't know Joseph. And he looked and he said, there's too many of them. Haven't we heard that before? Isn't that what we heard when Rachel and Leah built the house of Israel? And they were sojourners up in the land of Canaan. And it's great, we had all these babies all over the place. And then there were too many babies. The family was growing too big for that situation. And then this Pharaoh who didn't know Joseph, he thought this through. He said, they're going to become more and mightier than us. They'll be more numerous than us. And if there's any kind of rebellion, suppose these people who are different from us, suppose they join the rebellion. What are we going to do then? I mean, they could turn on us. That's bad news. So he decided to deal wisely or shrewdly. Let's see. I got to handle this situation. That's why they made me Pharaoh. All right. So he decrees that they will become slave laborers. He works them hard, hard labor with slave masters and forced labor. And they build these two cities of Pithon and Ramesses. So they become labor force in Egypt. That'll slow them down. But it didn't slow them down. The more they were oppressed, we're told in Exodus 1, the more they were oppressed, they multiplied. The more they multiplied and spread. I guess life got so hard there wasn't anything but making babies. I don't know. But they kept making them. Wow. And the Egyptians came to dread them. Now, you know, I live in South Carolina. I hope this won't shock you, but I'm thinking of fleas and roaches, you know. The harder you try to get rid of them, the more they multiply. Well, I think that's how the Egyptians are beginning to think, because the more effort they make to cut the numbers down, the harder it gets. And so they made their lives bitter. They worked them ruthlessly. They had made them do hard work with bricks and mortar. And in chapter 5, we're told that they even said, all right, you got to go out and get your own straw. They multiplied their work. They took away any help they got, and they just worked them. But that didn't seem to slow down the baby population. And so Pharaoh called in the midwives, Shifra and Puah. Calls these women in, says, your job, what do you do? You deliver the babies? Yes, sir, we work with the Jewish women and we help deliver their babies. Yes, that's our job. He says, well, here's what I want you to do. When a baby is just being born, if it's a girl, let it live. We'll intermarry with those, I guess. But if it's a boy, I want you to quietly strangle it. And just say, oh, I'm sorry, it was born dead. Because we're going to slow down this population. Well, Shifra and Puah were pro-life. They refused. They refused, the scriptures say, because they feared God. And they let the boys live. Well, a little bit later, the Pharaoh comes and says, hey, whoa, what's going on here? Why? How come they keep multiplying? Why isn't it working? And they say, oh, these women are so vigorous. They're not like Egyptian women. By the time we know the baby's about to come, we get there and it's already there. And they multiplied and became even more numerous, like the fleas and the roaches, as far as the Egyptians were concerned. And Shifra and Puah feared God, and they were blessed in their own families. And so finally Pharaoh says, look, I have had enough. From now on, every baby that's born, we're not going to strangle them and pretend they died in childbirth. When the baby is born, throw it in the Nile River. And so this infanticide, this destruction of babies becomes not covert and sort of secret. It becomes overt. I am going to wipe out these people. And so a baby is born to a man and woman, and he's put in the Nile. And that's what we'll talk about next session. But let me remind you of our steps. Step 1, the patriarchs, the promise, the covenant, the testament, the agreement, that promise that's reiterated over and over to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God lays this foundation based upon faith. Faith comes before works, right? Not afterwards. And then, step 2, through Rachel and Leah, he begins to build the house of Israel with as we go to the large family. Step 3, he takes a secret agent down, Joseph, whose name, he even has Egyptian secret name, Zaphnapaniah. And Zaphnapaniah he is down in Egypt. And there he is used to bring Israel down from Canaan. They are pushed out of there by the famine. And they send some of the sons down to get food. God keeps the pressure on with the famine. He brought the famine. Jacob is encouraged to bring his family down, is reunited with Joseph. And there in the incubator of Egypt, they grow into a great multitude. But you know, Joseph is a man of faith too, because he recognizes that they're not going to be in Egypt forever. He knows what God is doing. And so he says, I want my body preserved. Folks, when you all go back home, take me with you. And so he becomes an Egyptian mummy. And I was about to say, and of course there were lots of mummies because they multiplied. But no, we've got to stay serious here. There's this terrific sense of the future. And then Joseph dies and nobody remembers him. But the Jews have become an increasing multitude of people. What was it that chapter 1 said of Exodus? Wow. They were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty so that the Lord was filled with them. If you're going to have a nation, you got to have people. I mean, you're going to need some other things, right? But you got to have people. Oh, you also need kind of government leadership, and you need laws and structure, and it'd be nice to have a land too. But I mean, the very least, you got to start with people. And in Egypt, it was there that God made them into a multitude of people, preparing them for nationhood. God's not in a hurry. But, oh, there's unity here. Going back to the promised Abraham, there is the unity. But there is also progress, slowly, slowly. God is doing what he promised to do. So, our next session, we want to see about that baby. What happened to him?